You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Shifting the goalposts, Israel has used the pretext of Hezbollah's abduction of two Israeli soldiers to wage a broader war to crush Hezbollah. Gilbert Ashkar is a Lebanese author and intellectual. He teaches international relations at the University of Paris, and he's written numerous books on the Middle East. Recently, he has co-authored a book with Noam Chomsky titled Perilous Power. Red Eye's Chris Spano spoke with Gilbert yesterday. They spoke about Hezbollah, the impact of Israel's war of aggression on broader Lebanese politics, and the impact on surrounding Middle Eastern political forces. Here's their discussion.
Lebanon has been suffering Israeli military devastation since mid-July, and certainly Hezbollah must have anticipated Israel's response to their abductions of the two Israeli soldiers. What do you think were Hezbollah's political calculations and the reasons for their actions?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure it's certain that they anticipated anything on the scale. I mean, of course, they anticipated the fact that Israel would retaliate in some way, and they expected reprisals. But I'm sure that they didn't expect any full-scale offensive on such a huge scale and so destructive. I mean, what we are seeing is a kind of outpouring of destructive fury, which actually is even unprecedented, because even in 1982, Israel did not submit the country to such a destructive fury. So so in that sense, I don't think that Hezbollah anticipated what is happening. Now, what they probably were calculating was that Israel, of course, would react, but that would be the usual reaction, which was some bombing and something of the kind, and that Israel wouldn't be in a position to go much further, especially that it was in the midst of another offensive in Gaza against the Palestinian people, and that therefore they would be in a position to repeat what they've already done, and that is an exchange of prisoners with Israel, the last one being in 2004. And that's what were actually the stated goal of their operation. So, and beyond that, of course, one could say that in doing that, they were also trying to emphasize again their legitimacy as the embodiment of the Lebanese resistance to Israel. So these were their calculations, I think. Now, if we take the last point I just mentioned, in a sense, this unprecedented degree of brutality and the Israeli aggression on Lebanon actually fulfilled the last goal that I mentioned beyond Hezbollah's expectation. I mean, they have been turned into heroes not only in Lebanon and far beyond the Shiite community, which is their traditional constituency, but they turned into heroes at the level of the whole Arab and Muslim world. I mean, now you see demonstrations all over this part of the world with portraits of the chief of Hezbollah and Hezbollah flags. So in that sense, that's a great political victory for the Hezbollah.
Hezbollah's base is mainly comprised of Shiites, and Lebanon is actually comprised of many diverse communities. So I was wondering how those communities were relating to Hezbollah, and what those responses, what their responses have been within Lebanon.
Yeah, that's precisely the point. I mean, it's clear that what the Israeli government, and actually the United States behind the Israeli government, because it's very clear that this whole thing has been coordinated very narrowly between Washington and Israel. The expectation was that by putting all this tremendous pressure, by actually taking the whole of Lebanon, or the whole Lebanon's population hostage, they would be able to force the Lebanese to implement this disarmament of Hezbollah that the United States has been pushing for the last couple of years very intensively. But the fact is that the way Israel behaved, I mean, this kind of murderous brutality has been such that it proved completely counterproductive from the point of view of their own goal. It only succeeded in letting a great majority of the Lebanese, and as I said, far beyond the Shiite community alone, I mean, even a major section of the Christian communities in Lebanon, although one would have expected these communities to be rather hostile to Hezbollah. Well, actually what is happening is that there is a kind of unification of the country, including those forces which were backed by Washington and in the effort to drive the Syrian army out of Lebanon last year. So there was a kind of unification of all these people against Israel, perceived as the enemy of the whole of the Lebanese people, the enemy of Lebanon. I mean, people would tell you, I mean, this is not, I mean, the Israeli offensive, the Israeli aggression is not targeting Hezbollah, it is targeting the whole of Lebanon. It is destroying the Lebanese economy. It has destroyed the infrastructure of the country far beyond what has been destroyed even during the 15 years of war until 1990, from 75 to 1990. I mean, the level of destruction is completely unprecedented in the country. And, well, people see that and, you know, draw the conclusions from that.
Well, I'm wondering what kind of political legitimacy Hezbollah was capable of, say, even before the scale of Israel's devastating military attack, and how Hezbollah was viewed within the Lebanese population politically.
Well, Hezbollah had won itself a real legitimacy in the eye of the whole Lebanese population in having been the key force behind the armed resistance to the Israeli occupation of Lebanon, and for having played the key role in forcing the Israeli army to evacuate Lebanon, to withdraw from Lebanon completely in the year 2000. I mean, completely with regard to the territories, the Lebanese territory occupied in 1982, because there's a small portion of Lebanese territory which Israel occupied since 1967, but that's a different story. And so, I mean, Hezbollah has been perceived by the Lebanese population as, in that sense, a legitimate force. After that, I mean, you had a kind of split in the population, in the country, around the issue of the future of this armament, in the sense that you had both forces which had allied with the United States or which were backed by the United States and which fought the Syrian presence in Lebanon. Well, the same forces were trying to obtain the disarmament of the Hezbollah, stating that, well, now that the Israeli troops have left what they occupied in 82, there was no reason for Hezbollah to maintain its armament at the time when the other Lebanese political forces had disarmed after the civil war. So Hezbollah was objecting to that by saying that there are still a need for the resistance force, because on the one hand there is still a portion of Lebanese territory which has not been liberated. There are Lebanese prisoners held by Israeli custody. Israel is encroaching permanently on Lebanese sovereignty and represents a permanent threat, and there is no deterrent in Lebanon because the Lebanese army, I mean, is no match for the Israeli army, and can see now, I mean, it's almost invisible, absent from the confrontation. So this issue was being discussed in Lebanon, and even, I mean, those friends of Washington had reached the conclusion that in any case this can only be solved through political means, that is, it is through a political agreement with Hezbollah, because Hezbollah is not only an armed organization, Hezbollah is a huge political organization, it's a mass party with all kinds of social organizations, it has a lot of members of parliament, it has two ministers in the Lebanese government, so it's a fully legitimate political Lebanese political force. I mean, the idea was to negotiate a disarmament, but that involved concessions that had to be obtained from Israel, and that's why Washington's friends in Lebanon had asked repeatedly Washington to exert pressure on Israel in order to get Israel to relinquish this portion of territory that it occupies since 1967, and in order for Israel to free the prisoners, Lebanese prisoners, and, I mean, you know, that kind of concessions on Israel's side, which would have allowed Washington's friends, at least, to obtain some kind of, you know, solution for this issue of Hezbollah's separate armed wing in the country. I mean, there were talks about possible solutions for that, like integrating this armed wing in the Lebanese army in some way or another. Now, as I said, what Israel and the United States, we have Israel, thought that they could obtain through this terrible offensive was, I mean, an implementation by force, which would have meant, actually, pushing the Lebanese toward a new civil war, because you can't get rid of Hezbollah like that. I mean, it's a major force in the most the sizable, I mean, the largest community of all Lebanese religious communities. So, I mean, this is not a small thing. And the Lebanese have preferred, and until now that's the case, so for the time being at least, to maintain their unity. And as I said, they have been even more unified in the resistance to the Israeli aggression, knowing that if they had to enter into that kind of civil war that Israel is pushing for, that would be much more costly in human life than anything else. So that's the situation and where it stands. And so it's already clear that Israel, in any case, has failed in achieving the targets that were announced at the beginning. Remember when they were saying that they didn't want anything less than the complete dismantlement of Hezbollah's armed wing, and they didn't want any international force, but they wanted the Lebanese army to disarm Hezbollah and to spread to the south of the country. Now they have changed and revised their goals and targets. They are negotiating some kind of international force, which it is, I mean, already clear will hardly be the kind of force that they could have settled for. That is a force which would come with a mandate to try to smash the Hezbollah in some way or another. Now, it's very clear that no country in the world will send troops to Lebanon without a prior political agreement on the troops with the Hezbollah itself. So that's why I say, I mean, this is a tremendous victory for the Hezbollah. And whatever Ehud Olmert, the Israeli Prime Minister, may boast about, that being a pure mystification, because the reality, as even many observers, even in the Israeli press, emphasize it, is that this whole operation has been a failure.
I want to step back a little and look at the broader regional balance of forces. How does Hezbollah fit into what's called the Shiite axis, from Iran to Shiite forces in Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon?
Well, it's more than a Shiite axis. It is, a kind of anti-U.S. alliance. It's the major regional alliance standing in front of the United States, of U.S. hegemony, and the whole U.S. Imperial project. I mean, Iran is, of course, the central force in this alliance, and it goes through the pro-Iranian Shiite forces in Iraq. It includes the Syrian regime, which is in alliance with Iran. The Hezbollah, of course, is very much part of this alliance, but it's not only Shiite. Well, already the Syrian regime is not Shiite. Beyond that, I mean, Hamas can be also considered as part of this alliance. The Hamas, which is a Sunni organization, and increasing section of the whole Islamic fundamentalist movement in the Arab world, and I mean by that the Sunnis, not the Shiites, is supporting this alliance. I mean, not least of them, the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, which is by far the main popular force in Egypt, a force which I mean, most observers agree that had you had any real democratic and free elections in Egypt, they would win it without great difficulty.
It's very clear that these alliances pose a threat to U.S. and Israel empire building within the region. And I'm wondering what you think that means for how anti-war movements in the West should relate to groups like Hezbollah and Hamas.
Well, I think anti-war forces, as the name indicates, their major, let's say, task is to fight against the war. I mean, to fight against the warmongers, especially in their governments, to fight against the war drive of their own governments. And that's the main task of the anti-war. The anti-war is not a movement to support the forces, I mean, on the outside of the fence. That's another issue. Now, of course, I mean, when you are faced with forces that are not really very much palatable for progressives or left-wingers because of their religious character, because of their Islamic fundamentalist character, which entails a lot of consequences at the level of their social vision, the vision of women, and all the rest. I understand that there's a problem, but people, I mean, even if you dislike profoundly such forces, one should be aware of the fact that it is the very behavior of the likes of the U.S. Administration and the Israeli government that is the greatest recruiting factor for such movements. It fuels such movement, and Washington has been fueling the growth of Islamic fundamentalism now for several years in the whole area, and that's absolutely clear. And on the other hand, anti-war people, anti-imperialist people, anti-supporter of the people's right to self-determination should be consequence. I mean, you defend the people's right to self-determination, which means also the right of the people to choose whichever leadership they want and to go through their own experiences. But it's not up to Washington or Israel to impose their will on any people by the force of their arms.
That was Red Eyes' Chris Spanos speaking with Gilbert Akkar. Gilbert is a Lebanese author and intellectual. He teaches international relations at the University of Paris, and he's written numerous books on the Middle East. Most recently, he co-authored a book with Noam Chomsky titled Perilous Power.